supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
IFM.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. So, when you think about money, what's your first reaction? Many say security. Others say power. It's all about a personal relationship. So what does money mean in our lives, in your life? How have we learned our lessons about money? What do we learn from our family of origin and from the media? And what are the lessons we give to our children, intentionally and unintentionally? So I've asked a bunch of questions, and I've got two guests that can answer them all and more. My guests are Kate Levinson and Neil Godfrey. Kate is the author of Emotional Currency. She's a psychotherapist and couples counselor. She leads workshops on women's emotional and psychological relationship with money. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan.
I'm also joined by Neil Godfrey. She's a banker as well as a best-selling author of many, many books aimed at empowering children and their families to take charge of their financial lives. Hi, Neil. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dan. I'm a big fan of yours, and I love Kate's work, so it's very exciting to be with you today.
That's great. Well, after doing some research into your life and career, right back at you. I'm a big fan of yours, too.
Thank you.
So let's get some callers, too. It's 888-477-9499. What's your relationship with money? What does it mean to you to have more? What does it mean to lose what you have? 888-477-9499. Kate, let's start with you. You've really made this money issue the centerpiece of your career. How come?
As with all things, I guess there's a strong autobiographical component. And I trained as a therapist. I worked as a therapist for years without even thinking, noticing that money wasn't part of our conversations in my training or in my personal therapy. And circumstances led me to, my husband and I sold a house. Very clear that we wanted to sell the house, and the market escalated. The real estate market, went out of the ballpark in the next few months after we sold. And I had this experience of walking in my neighborhood and feeling as if I was a bag lady. Now, I had a roof. We were renting a house. I had a roof over my head. I had plenty of food on the table, and I knew this was crazy, but it was very strong, and I couldn't shake it. And I'm grateful for that experience now, because it led me to look at money in my family and my own psyche, which has been a very rich experience in my life, and led me to begin to talk with my clients and lead the workshops to learn that we have a lot to say to one another about money.
I wonder what Carl Jung would say about that bag lady fear. I hear that over and over and over again from women, that specific fear. It's archetypical.
Right, and it's not connected, as all of our emotions regarding money, they're not connected to how much we actually have. So that they tell us a lot about ourselves because of that. It had nothing to do with my material conditions. It had to do with an insecurity, excuse me, that I felt about being in the world. And, it's very recent that women have had in the United States, let alone other places in the world, have had control and access over their own money. So I think appreciating that this is very new territory for us, that we've been dependent and we've legally been kept from control of our money for so long. So we're all, many of us, I should say, the newer generation much less so, but many of us feel incredibly vulnerable. And in fact, we all are vulnerable. You know, to be alive is to be vulnerable. And this idea that money will protect us from will cure all our ills and protect us is just not true.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was writing this billboard. The introduction today with our associate producer Emily Haas, and I started with my opening question. You know, what does money mean to you? And she said to me, "Well, Dan, what does it mean to you?" And my first reaction to that was safety. And I asked her, and she said, in effect, access. It means potential for fun, but it does represent safety and security for so many.
Right, but money alone does not protect us. You know, it's a whole other, there are all sorts of other resources in our life that that protect us. And it's interesting, I just thought of something that Jung did say about money, which was that you can have too much money, so that too much money can be a cocoon. That's how he described it. It can cocoon us, so it keeps us from engaging in life. And actually, I've come to see, I also used to feel that money was security for me, but I've come to see that it's really engagement in life that makes me feel safer about life. It's relationships and
well,
skills.
There's a ton of research that supports that. But I want to, let me turn to you, Neil, about the cultural attitude about money. So what is our culture teaching us about money, about what it means and what it does?
Well, Dan, it's an interesting question. What I'd like to do is also respond to what you and Kate were talking about. I think that we should look at money as a tool, nothing more, nothing less. The same dollar can go to drugs or it can go to charity. It's the user's choice, just the same way that you would use a hammer. You can make, you know, you can build a house or knock somebody over the head with it. So I think if we take it away and don't give it the power that you guys are talking about, I think that we can all have a healthier attitude toward it. It isn't the security. It isn't all those other things that we're talking about. It's not something to fear. There isn't too much. There isn't too little. It's a tool. It's no more, no more, or no less, which is what I try to empower the parents and grandparents to teach their kids. Culturally, it's not about the money. It's about the stuff that the money gets us. So I think that society, and we live in the largest capitalistic nation in the world. That's great because, again, it's a nation of choice. But we have to start teaching ourselves and our kids, it's not about the stuff. You're not cooler because you have cooler jeans, and you're not cooler because you have a cooler house, and you're not cooler. So if we take that value judgment away, now all of a sudden money gives us the power to make choices, to have that healthy life, so that Kate doesn't have to panic to think about the bag lady syndrome. And what's really important?
Well,
does it matter profoundly?
Well, wait
and
a
now
minute.
It gives her that freedom to make those choices.
Well, let me challenge you because, you know, I agree with you, but you know, you're talking to a shrink here, and
two shrinks.
Yeah,
shrinks. I'm talking to two shrinks.
Yeah, this is going to be a survival issue for you, Neil. So, but the question is, you know, that sounds great what you're saying, but how do you do it? You know, you tell the kids that new sneaks doesn't make you cool, but their peers are saying it, TV's saying it, the media's saying it.
What you do is you teach them the natural consequences of money. Start from the very beginning. When they start saying, I want, I want, which you shrinks know is about age two. By the way, I give them a year off for good behavior, so I don't start the little ones until they're about three. I teach them the way you get money is to earn it. There's no entitlement program. You don't get to whine for it. You don't get to beg for it. You earn it. fact of life. That's how it works. Then, around that money, you get to be empowered to make some choices. I am going to set a budget up for you, though. Part of the money goes to charity. Part of it is instant gratification. You worked hard. You get to make some choices. Part of it is going to be saved for medium-term saving, because I'm going to teach you the habit of pushing off instant gratification. And then part of it goes long-term. You're not going to understand what long-term is, but you're not going to understand a lot of stuff when you're a little one. But I'm going to teach you those habits around money. So just like we build up good habits with you guys psychologically, a good habit to be kind to somebody, a good habit don't break someone's toy, a good habit to say please and thank you, those are all habits. Just like brushing your teeth and getting up in the morning and stopping at a red light. Of course the kids don't understand, but don't you guys say that if you repeat something 50,000 times, you know, the human brain begins to absorb that?
Yeah, well, we've heard that on the political cycles, haven't we?
It kind of works. What a great job they've done, too.
That's Neil Godfrey you're listening to. She's a best-selling author of more than two dozen books that addresses children and adolescents. I'm also joined by Kate Levinson, who's the author of Emotional Currency. We're talking about money and what it means in our lives and our relationship with money. Give us a call. We're at 888-477-9499. Ladies, let's go to the phones. We've got Ann on the line. Hi, Ann.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a question for your guests. I didn't learn very good money lessons as a child, and so my husband and I are absolutely opposite. He is a saver, he's all about security, and I just have no regard for money. I really want to change, I really want to try, but I just don't care, and I just feel like saving it for what? One day we'll die. Why save it forever? I want to change, but I don't know how. What do I do?
Wait a minute. I'm not convinced that you really want to change.
I do. I promise you, I do. I don't like to see my husband frustrated by the fact that, you know, the credit card goes up or the Amazon bill gets... I really want to care, but I kind of don't.
Yeah. All right. So now that we've made it complicated, now I'm going to turn it over to my experts. Let's, Kate,
so
you want to
take? I'll say what Dan would say, I imagine, which is that you do have to have a motivation. You have to really want to change, because otherwise it's an empty exercise. It may be enough that there's conflict in your marriage around it, and you'll have to see. But so I want to go back to what Neil said, because I share the same goal, that money just be money, that money be a vehicle for our having a happier life, a more creative life, a more engaged life, and that we kind of heal our wounds about money, and we see through the cultural messages and the family messages, and we find the place where money really is for each of our lives, the best place. So you will not look like your husband in terms of money, ever. But if you can, I'd start with, why don't you care about money at all? Because, you know,
do I see it as too much of a vehicle? Because honestly, I don't think of it as a security blanket. I don't, you know, I'm not hoarding it away. It's just a vehicle for me.
A vehicle for what?
For groceries or for what? I mean, I'm not materialistic. I don't, you know, stock up on stuff. I don't go and get fancy haircuts or anything. I just don't pay attention to it, is what it is. I really don't pay any
problem. But that actually is a problem, not paying too little attention to money. Perhaps it's compensating for things that happened in your family where it was too important. I don't know. But there's a balance for each of us where we pay attention, where we are actually paying attention some to the future and some to the present. We don't deny totally our future because we need to save, and we don't deny completely our present You know, like all things, having a balanced relationship to money is important. So there's just as you're talking, or at least in the context of your relationship, there needs to be more attention paid. And so you explore like any emotional aspect of your life. You start keeping your eyes open when you use it, when you pay. You use cash if you only use credit cards. You use credit cards if you only use cash. You stir it up. You play with it, and you pay attention to your emotional reactions to it. And then you can have a discussion with your husband.
I would
with
also
more awareness.
Let me chime in here that this is also a marital issue here and a communication issue. You imply, and by virtue of this call, that you are wrong and your husband is right in your approach to money. And I disagree that your husband is not necessarily 100% right, and that, know it or not, you do have a relationship with money. You do have thoughts and philosophies around money that perhaps have never been examined. So I think you and your husband both have something to bring to the table, and I think the issue is, as long as he is so controlling about money, and as long as you think he is right and you are wrong, then you are free to be frivolous with money. So it's a relationship issue, and
yes,
you guys need to talk. So unfortunately, we've got to take a break. I wish you the best, and you and your husband, now that I've just screwed up your marriage. But, you know, you'll have something to talk about tonight over dinner. You know, so thanks so much for your call. Like I said, we're going to have to take just a very short break. We're talking about our relationship with money today with Kate Levinson, who's a psychotherapist, author of Emotional Currency. Neil Godfrey is a best-selling author, and she chairs the Children's Financial Network and is president of Green Street Commons. It's a gaming app that teaches children money skills. We're going to talk about that later in the show. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
University of the Sciences in Philadelphia supports WHYY. Careers in healthcare and the sciences continue to be strong. University of the Sciences has been preparing graduates for almost 200 years with hands-on learning, respected faculty, and a student life experience. Offering pre-med, occupational or physical therapy, pharmacy, or any other of 25 undergraduate, 20 master's, and PhD programs where healthcare and science converge. More online at usciences.edu.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking with psychotherapist Kate Levinson and Neil Godfrey, who is a very successful banker and author of many books about children and finances. Our number is 888-477-9499. Kate, I want to go to you. You've had some interesting lists in your book about people's words associated with money. Do you have that handy, or do you remember a few of the words?
Yeah, I have it here.
So read down some of that list for us.
So just in a few of the E's are embarrassment, empty, encourage, energy, enjoyment, enmeshment, enough, enslavement, entitlement, envy, equality, escape, self-esteem, exclusion experiences.
And that's just the E.
Etc. Yeah.
Words. Yeah. Etc. So, all right. So that pretty much covers the spectrum, those E words. So tell us about what happens in childhood. What do we learn about money and how do we learn it?
Well, Neil probably can speak best to this, but we learn, the family is probably our most important teacher about money. And we observe how our parents are. They tell us how to be. And often what they, how they think they are, how they'd like to be, is very different from their behavior. And then, much as Anne described, they come from completely different backgrounds, perhaps, but they, whether or not they do, they have different attitudes about money. Money means different things to them. As Neil's saying, money in and of itself doesn't mean anything, but we assign or attribute different meanings to it. And so often our parents have conflicts about money. My parents certainly did. And so we get differing messages. And each person within us, we're conflicted as well. I shouldn't say we're conflicted. We have contradictory pulls around money. So what we inherit as children is a very complex and contradictory and idiosyncratic. We learn in our families about giving and receiving, and we learn about power and control. We learn about inclusion and exclusion and favoritism.
And then we go out into the outside world and expose ourselves to media. But, I want to turn to you.
And one other thing I want to say, which is why I'm so happy that you're having this show and that Neil has been doing this work for so many years. We are taught that we're supposed to deal with money just financially, when in fact we have all these experiences, emotional experiences, psychological experiences, and there's really no place to talk about them or to acknowledge them, because of the shame involved, because of the taboo about talking about money, because the financial model has dominated money. And so it's not that anything's wrong with us, but that we need opportunities. We need to recognize that we do have emotional baggage around money and that we need to heal it and deal with it.
Yeah, Neil, it's really interesting. I find in my practice, it's a psychotherapy practice. People answer anything I asked about their lives, their areas of shame, their history. All of their secrets come out in psychotherapy. But if I say to them, well, how much money do you have in the bank? Well, that takes us to a different level.
Right, that's perfect.
And I watch reactions to that, and people squirm, and it's really interesting. Like, that's the last taboo. I don't want to talk about it, and yet we need to, don't we?
Absolutely.
So, which brings us back to the family question. What's the message our children get when it doesn't get talked about?
Well, from my standpoint, just as both of you were saying, it is the last taboo. It's the last frontier. When I was working with Oprah for years, it was easy to get people on the show who would talk about their sex lives. That somehow wasn't personal. But exactly what you're saying, Dan, when we said to them, well, what do you make and what do you have saved, and that would be, that's personal. Or with couples, what does he earn? What do you earn? Well, I couldn't ask him that. And it was just, you took your clothes off, and that wasn't personal, but you won't ask what his financial circumstances, how much debt does he have? I think that behaviorally, what both of you are saying, too, is that around the money issue, it's something like 80% of all divorces are due to these money issues. We fight about money more than we fight about anything else. And that's, I think, also with the kids, when they see this, this is a value judgment placed on that. But when we look behaviorally with money, I want to break the walls down and make sure that we talk about money the same way we talk about everything else. Because all our kids ever see us do with money is spend it. They don't see us save. They don't see us pay bills. They don't see us give to charity. They don't see the rest of it. I want them to understand the business relationship with money.
So what you're doing is turning money into money and
yes.
making it less symbolic. Mm-hmm. I was thinking as I was listening to you, Neil, when they see parents arguing about money but never talking about it, so the message that comes across is money is a source of anxiety, and the nonverbal message is that more money will solve these problems in my family. I'm reminded of The Rocking Horse Winner, the short story by, I forgot the author's name, relatively current author. But, you know, it's a story where a mother's suffering. The little boy, you know, feels that if they had enough money that mother wouldn't suffer. And he gets on a rocking horse and he rocks himself into a trance, and he comes up with the name of a horse that's going to win. So he gives the name to his uncle. His uncle bets on the horse. Money starts coming in, but it's not enough. His mother's still unhappy. And he keeps doing this, and ultimately he rocks himself into a trance so deeply that he dies.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not about money. By the way, my crack producer, Jennifer Lynn, tells me that the short story was written by D.H. Lawrence. Thank you. Jennifer's my official memory during the week. So, you know, it's not about money per se. It's about we feel in our gut that it's going to cure anxiety.
I think that will always be true, that the money will always carry lots of meanings, but that if we can see what the meanings are, we're not caught by them. We're not as caught by them. And that having conversations like Neil saying, taking money out of hiding, you know, we feel shame about it and we aren't honest about it with ourselves or with others. And that it's that hiding in part that makes us be able to project all these amazing attributes to it. And talking about it, I loved what Neil said. I never thought of it, but of course we see the fights, but we don't see the making it. We don't see the saving of it, and as children, and we feel the anxiety and the stress and the hiding and the shame, and so it becomes something that we really have trouble seeing. And when we have trouble seeing it in our lives, it creates problems. One more problem.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Janelle on the line. Hi, Janelle.
Hi, how are you today, Dan? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I clearly have an emotional attachment to money. Most months out of the year, I'm able to make ends meet and pay all my bills at the end of the month, but there are some months that I'm not able to do it, and it literally makes me physically sick when I can't make ends meet, and I'm in the bathroom physically sick.
We're talking about a different level of money here, and Kate, I want to turn to you. We're talking about someone who doesn't have any disposable income, apparently, so I don't know. This anxiety makes sense to me. Kate?
Yes. Right. We talk about money emotionally, but we can't lose sight of the fact that not having enough is a different kind of money, right? It's a different situation. So what's enough is a question, of course. But if we don't have enough to cover the basics, we're in kind of different territory. And you know, what comes to mind is that you are far from alone. Part of the problem that in our not talking with our friends or trusted others about money is that we feel isolated and we feel as if we're the only person having this problem, or, you know, being sick or being up in the middle of the night. And, in fact, many people in your circle may also be going through this. So the main thing that comes to mind is creating a support network so that you don't feel so afraid and alone, and so that some fresh air and light can come onto this topic, because talking with others, we get suggestions for how we might deal. Simple suggestions, practical suggestions, as well as suggestions of how to handle it emotionally.
You know,
so finding a person to talk to, breaking through the shame. We all have shame about money, whether we have shame for having too much or too little, or how we're managing it. We all have shame. Shame doesn't kill us. If we can tolerate the shame and break through and make sure we're talking to someone who's not competitive with us or not, you know, who's fairly open, able to be open themselves about money, it brings so much support. I can't tell you how invaluable that is.
Kate, you make an interesting point for Janelle when you talk about reaching out to a friend or maybe even more friends to build a support network. Janelle, you had that image of you in the bathroom being sick, not just being home being sick, but in the bathroom. It's so isolated there. It's so alone, and you know the bathroom is so. You know, that's an area where we do our most shameful things in there. So, you know, it's boy, I love what Kate said to you. So I hope you have those resources in your life, and I do hope you reach out, because Kate was right on target for you.
I think also, and this is Neil, that with Janelle, I think that one side of it is the emotional side, which absolutely has to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with professionals in the support system. But the other side, I would say to her, let's talk about how come this happens, and there are only two things you can do with money. Either you can earn more or spend less. It's a very simplistic process. So if we know this is going to happen, or we suspect it's going to happen, how can we avert the train wreck and work with her on a short-term and a long-term program to avoid that, so she doesn't have to experience this angst?
You know, we're going to talk about this later, but I really don't like how you take things from being so complex and complicated to simplify it. It could ruin my career here. We make our living on making things complicated. So just watch yourself, okay? We're gonna take a short break here. We'll be back in just 60 seconds. That was Neil Godfrey, who's a best-selling author, and she's written more than 24 books that addresses children and finances. When we come back, I want to talk to you, Neil, about your app that teaches children money skills. We're also talking with Kate Levinson. She's the author of Emotional Currency. She's a therapist and couples counselor, and I want to hear about her workshops with couples. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
We've all heard it, forgive and forget. Faith leaders, psychiatrists, they say it's good for your mind and good for your health, but some people are saying forget that. We'll talk with serious-minded people who tell us when it's best to forget about forgiving. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Kate Levinson and Neil Godfrey about our relationship with money. Our number is 888-477-9499. What does money mean to you? What does it represent? Do you want more? If so, why? What will you have if and when you have more money? 888-477-9499. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Charlie on the line.
Hi, Dan.
Go on.
Great topic. Thanks for having this on. I'm a financial advisor, and one of the first questions I ask a prospect when we're engaging is, "What does money mean to you?" And we work very hard to get to the emotional aspects of money. And we frequently work with multiple generations because parents have values related to money, and it's a challenge to transmit those values to the next generation when there may be a lot of money or when there's very little money. People come into meetings with the expectation that money is not an emotional thing, and we really do our clients a service by recognizing that there's nothing more emotional than money. And I think some of the comments earlier about how easily people can talk about their sexual lives, but how difficult it is for them to talk about their financial lives really points to that.
Yeah, I think if money wasn't it wasn't an emotional issue, Charlie, nobody would knock on your door in the first place.
Yeah, that's right, and the impact of losing money is a big deal for a lot of people, and we try to control that emotion because all this field of behavioral finance, we're finding that our emotional connection to money leads us to make bad decisions about it.
Usually,
and we hope to prevent that. So it's a great topic, and the idea of communicating with children about money is something I'm really passionate about. So I'm going to be going through your other guests' books.
Yeah, Neil, follow up.
Fantastic topic, and as usual, thanks for a great topic.
Sure, thank you, Charlie. Neil, I want to follow up here with something that Charlie said. You know, sometimes children or parents are only clear with children when the will is read.
I know, Dan. And I love what Charlie said, because I work with financial advisors, with their clients, about passing the money to the next generation, the will, exactly what you're saying. And my whole thing is I sit down with the people, with the financial advisor, and say, hold it. It's not about the money. It's about the values and life skills you want to pass on to the next generation. The money, again, is a tool. And you need to communicate, what is that money for? It's probably not for drinking margaritas, buying the Ferrari, and living, you know, on the beach. So tell the kids. Talk to the kids. Talk to the kids while you're alive. I mean, what you've done with Sam. I mean, that's what you've done, Dan. It's not about the money. It's about who am I? Do we want to set up a family charity? Do we want to do certain volunteer work together? What is that hard-earned money? How did mom, dad, grandma, and grandpa earn the money? What has it been?
What's it for, and what do you want it to be for? Not control. Not, you know, Kate, in terms of the control part. And I understand that, and I agree with you. It can be, you know, the hammer in the family. It's about who I am. My legacy is me, not my money. So I'm with you on that, Dan. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off into the wild blue yonder.
No,
but
that's okay. We do passion here. I've got to tell you, I learned a powerful lesson about money when my father died. He left a small estate to me, and I gave the vast majority of it to his children and, at the time, his great-grandchild. But then there was about $40,000 left over. And I helped a struggling neighbor, friend of mine, put a new roof on their house. And then my other dear friend was struggling, and her daughter was getting married. So I bought her wedding gown, and I just gave it away.
Yep.
And, oh, my God, I never enjoyed money so much.
Yep. But it's who you are, and that's what you want. And how proud your parents would be. I mean, how cool is that?
Well, my father would be proud. We don't know about my mother. She was, she lived with financial anxiety. But I want to come back to this popular notion that maybe the two of you peddle also, and that's money can't buy happiness. But epidemiologists, when they look around the world, they see that's not necessarily true. That they look at happiness levels in rich countries versus poor countries, and happiness level in rich countries is much higher than poor countries. So what say you? I'll turn to you, Kate.
Well, I get confused by the studies, I have to say. And a lot of studies show that money doesn't buy happiness. But I think, it's Malcolm Gladwell, I heard him speak about an inverted U curve lately. And I think it really applies to money. So that an upside-down U, and up to a certain point, I believe the studies show, and certainly my experience, money does bring more happiness. But then at some point it levels off, at the top of the curve, the bottom of the U, it levels off, and then it can actually cause more problems and unhappiness as you get more money. So it's not I don't think it's a direct, upward line with money. I think that some brings comfort and a lack of worry about, you know, paying for the car repair or the seeing a doctor, the mortgage. But at some point, money actually can complicate our lives. And certainly in this culture, there are a whole set of burdens that come along with it.
I want to do a follow-up with you, Neil. There was a study done in California years ago that showed when people use discretionary funds to purchase things, it didn't make them happier. But when they used it to purchase experiences like vacations or mm-hmm. social activities, it did make them happier.
Yes, and I think that we've got to be clear on the fact that after people's basic needs are taken care of in terms of food, clothing, shelter, things like that. So I think we have to look at that, and then the studies make sense in terms of kicking in. So you can't worry about quality of life when you're starving to death in India. So we have to look at the developed nations we have to look at the control groups in terms of that. And the experience in terms of the memory and that is what adds to the quality of life, which obviously goes back to the you need some money to be able to afford that. But my contention is you can buy, and that's in quotes, experiences. You can take a kid to a museum, to a movie, to children want to spend time with you. So it can be non-monetary. Take them out. I would get my kids up to go see the stars at night. It didn't cost anything. We would also go secret runs for hot fudge sundaes, too. I'm sure I was a bad mother.
Yeah,
but I mean,
I want to talk to you after the show. I mean, you know, you're working your kids half to death. I see them in the house with brooms and, yes. and rubber gloves on. Then you're waking them up in the middle of the night.
I know.
We've got it.
I know, Kate, and it's time for an intervention. And yeah, my grandchildren, Kate, I'm doing the same. You know, we're doing the same. Let's have reverse meals and eat dessert first. I'm just a bad grandma.
Oh no, I'm a grandfather.
Too much fun.
That's what we're
too much exactly. But you know what? They do chores, and they clean up the schmutz, and they know that in order to get stuff, and it's okay to want stuff. Let's go earn the money.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're participating in the life with you. Yeah,
right.
Let's go to the phones. We've got a caller here that I really want to talk to. Tor, can we get Tor on the line? Hi, Tor.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. So tell us your story.
Well, I had a situation that made me really feel ashamed. And I recall I was writing in my journal, and it was at a point in time when I didn't have any money. Then I received a lump sum of money. And I wrote in my journal, receiving the money was like a breath of fresh air. So afterwards, after I read what I had written, I felt really ashamed because I said to myself, my pockets can go without green paper, but my lungs can never be without oxygen. I wouldn't be able to live. And it's just the comparison that I made with fresh air and money, just it really made me feel really ashamed. And it made me feel as though I had a unhealthy relationship with money.
Well, Tor, this business of shame is really about a critical self-judgment. So you had a reaction to acquiring money, and then for some reason, you beat yourself up. You judged yourself harshly for your reaction, for your actually joy, huh? When you got this money and you had it in your pocket, sounds like you felt joy.
I felt like more things were available to me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I felt, yeah.
Relief. You felt air when you hadn't felt air so readily before in your lungs.
Yeah.
So we've been talking the whole show about how money is not money. So I'm going to turn to my guest. Let me turn to you, Kate, and wonder. You know, this critical self-judgment is this about a pattern of judging ourselves harshly, or is it about money?
It's about both, I guess. And you know, living in a culture where money determines so much, it's really inescapable, and so we criticize ourselves. We're worried about other people's judgments about ourselves, and I don't know when Neil said something about people starving in India. I just went to people starving in the United States, right. And I had this feeling of I have so much. And there are people who have so little. It's just like, it's just like a flashing feeling. The shame of having when other people don't have, or the shame of not having when other people do. So, you're in that territory, and it's really complicated.
Well,
what I do say is that as much as we can be curious about that and explore it, the shame keeps us from being able to look. And so if we can move through the shame, we can't push it away, but if we can feel it and move through it and become curious about why did I feel that, we get some answers.
Well, I'm going to take a page out of Neil's book and maybe simplify this issue, and perhaps shame about having too much money can be cured simply by generosity. Neil?
I agree with you, and that's one of the things. You guys know how great people feel. And kids, why wouldn't we give them that joy of giving and really get them involved and make it that you hand
a homeless person some food and go buy the food and give it to them and then congratulate the child and let them feel that. Let them feel that pride and that generosity and let them see what a wonderful tool. You did that because you had money and you were able to share the money. How cool is that? So make it, to me, again, I don't mean to simplify, but I do keep it simple. Give that little empowerment. And if you're playing a game or playing a video app or doing something, make it fun, interactive. That's all I do. I teach people to earn, save, spend, and share in hopefully a healthy manner so they don't confuse net worth with self-worth.
Neil, in about the minute or so we have left, tell us about your app.
Oh, it's called Green Streets Unleash the Loot, and it's a game that little kids 5 to 10 years old can play to teach them to earn the money in a very positive way, to release endangered animals. And then while the kids are playing, we shoot emails to mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, and educators to tell them how and what the kids are learning. And then parents can come and subscribe to a little newsletter that I have on my website on greenstreetcommons.com so that we can continue to be connected, to have the words to talk about money in a very healthy way so that when they see you, Dan, and see you, Kate, they can really pinpoint that it's not about the money, it's about themselves and their view about what they're doing.
Well, I want our guests to know that we've got a lot of information about Green Tree Commons on our webpage. I'm sorry, Green Street Commons on our website, whyy.org/voices. And we can hear much more about Kate's work. She has people write money memoirs, and it's really fascinating and be a good read. That's also on our website, whyy.org/voices. Well, I want to thank both of you, Neil Godfrey and Kate Levinson. Thanks so much for what you've brought to the show. It's been an important and fun show. Hey, next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to do something different. We're going to meet the creative forces behind a new artistic project that tells the stories of families of children with intellectual disabilities, past, present, and future. Well, if you want to comment on today's show, we're at whyy.org/voices, and you can download this and other shows right there, or we're on iTunes. Hey, follow us on Twitter. We're at Voices in the Fam, and me, I'm at drdangottlieb.com. We'd love to hear from you.